Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for nearly 50 years.
Coming up on Hometown Alaska, host Dave Waldron dives into the world of youth summer camps. Does Anchorage's lack of childcare give you anxiety about what your kids can do this summer? Are you suffering from decision paralysis? Well, maybe our guests can help you navigate what your kid or kids might be interested in. And on State of Art, join me, Ammon Swenson, for a conversation with author Aurora Hardy. We'll discuss her book, Honor at Last, a fictional biography of her father who joined the Alaska Territorial Guard during World War II at 12 years old and left her family when she was 4. She says it was a way to grow closer to a father she barely knew and show the lasting impacts on Alaska Natives whose military service went largely unappreciated. That's all coming up next on Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron and today we're gearing up for summer. And I know what some of you might be thinking, there's still snow on the ground, why are we talking about summer? Well, now is the time for parents and providers to be registering their kids for summer camps. It's not a secret that Alaska has a child care shortage, and many of our summer camps fill up fast. But thankfully, there are tons of options out there. Everything from single-day camps to one-week programs, and even a few places that offer childcare and enrichment for the entire summer. On today's show, we'll be talking about every kind of camp you can find, whether it's a niche interest or something more general. And with me now in the studio is Noelle Marty. She's the education coordinator for the Anchorage Museum. Noelle, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So the Anchorage Museum offers their own summer camps throughout the entire summer. They're all 3 days long, but the options are super varied. Can you list off some of the different options there?
Yeah. So every week we're going to have a different theme starting in June through August, except for the week that 4th of July falls on. And some of the themes include, we have a wayfinding camp, we'll have a birds camp, we have a space and flight camp, we have a start to art camp for littles who are looking for an opportunity to explore different kinds of art. We have a robotics camp for older kids, laser camp for older kids, Arctic marine science, so a whole lot. 10 different camps with different themes.
Lots of options there. Yeah, the laser camp was really speaking to me. I thought maybe it was like laser tag at first, and then I looked into it. It's like, oh no, that's cool. You make like music with lasers.
So it culminates in like a laser music show, basically, is what they're making. So
absolutely. Yeah. Sounds fun. So what is the age range for your programs?
So June and July camps are going to be ages 7 through 12, so a broader age range. And then the last 2 weeks of camp in August, we split the ages just to cater to different age range needs. So we'll have a 7 to 9-year-old camp and a 10 to 12-year-old camp each of those weeks.
And the Tuesday through Thursday thing, that's a new thing, right? You used to offer different kinds of times?
Yeah, I believe before my time at the museum a few years ago, we did more weeks of camp, full weeks of camp, and moved away from that. And for a while, we were offering 2 full weeks of camp at the end of summer, but we decided we wanted to expand our offerings again. So now we're moving to the whole summer and offering camps Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, most weeks.
And so what inspired this? What made the Anchorage Museum want to start up camps? Was it just the lack of childcare in our city, or was it something else?
Yeah, I think we were trying to meet community needs, and we felt that we had the capacity to take on more at this point. And, you know, we had considered maybe doing a couple extra weeks of full weeks, but we thought we would be serving people better by doing more weeks, even if it wasn't 5-day program. It was also a great opportunity for us to get to explore a bunch of different themes that we're interested in. Mm. So our education team, we have a lot of people who have different backgrounds, so they get a chance to put out programs and offerings that relate to things that they know a lot about and are real experts in.
So how excited are kids to come and spend the whole day at the museum? It's such a great space to explore, especially when you're young or old. But what is their reaction to when they get there? And are they allowed to kind of explore the space? Or are they stuck in one area? How does it work?
Yeah, so we do get a lot of repeat customers, I will say. So I think kids are pretty excited to come to the museum, and we are obviously very excited to have them. It's a combination of facilitated time where we're running activities for them, and then they do get a chance to explore other areas of the museum. They get time in the Discovery Center most days, which is that hands-on area, you know, with the intertidal tank, sort of Chomper.
Like Imaginarium.
Yeah, the former Imaginarium. Uh-huh. They get time in there. But they'll also get to see most parts of the museum through time with the educators. We try to add in gallery experiences wherever we can so that they can engage with the museum's collection.
You mentioned Chomper, the giant turtle. Mm-hmm. Is there a camp where they can interact with Chomper? I have to know. I've seen Chomper come out of his enclosure before and like walking around on the grass during your summer events. Is that one of them by chance?
No, but they will get to see Chomper, and he does react to you if you go up to the glass. Be kind and gentle with your interactions with him, but you will get to meet Chomper and see him multiple times. I will say, in our dinosaurs camp, which is very cool, dinosaur camp is cool, the kids will get to meet one of our reptiles because we do have a living collection at the museum.
That's
right, we don't all get to see all the time.
Yeah, occasionally I'll see, like, I want to say a bearded dragon. Maybe not a bearded dragon, but you have a couple of reptiles.
Yeah, we have some
there.
Snakes, bearded dragons, turtles. So, yeah, lots to see.
I see a lot of your programs are listed as STEAM programs. Mm-hmm. So I've heard STEM programs. I think most people know what STEM is. But when did we add the A and make it STEAM? What is that?
So as you all probably know, STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. And STEAM stands for science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And I think we're really trying to show that our programs are very interdisciplinary. So even if something is a science program, like there's going to be an opportunity to be learning that through maybe an arts activity and vice versa.
Right.
So I think we always try to make all of our programs very interdisciplinary so that they're, just engaging for everyone. It's more fun to learn that way.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to design a spaceship, you might as well put some cool artwork on it as well.
Yeah.
Like,
and
tag
art,
it.
You know, that's the real world. You know, there things involve more than just one discipline. So,
yeah, I wonder if the space camp's going to get filled up extra. You said it's sold out.
It is sold out right now, but
because we went to the moon.
I know it's the Artemis too. It's big. It's big.
People are crazy for it right now. I love it. Well, thankfully, despite our city's shortage of childcare options, there's a lot of summer camps out there offered up in the coming months. What do you think makes the Anchorage Museum's program stand out from all the others?
Well, there are definitely a lot of really fun camps out there. I think they really get a chance to learn while they're having fun. And I think our educators are really dedicated to making learning fun, and they really get to learn about things that they wouldn't normally be exposed to in school and really dive deeper into certain topics. And we always do this through hands-on learning and experiences, which I think makes it really special. They also get to really engage again with our collection and our resources in a way that is difficult to do outside of the situation at that age.
Right. So you said you have a lot of repeat customers. Does that mean someone will be there for the birding camp 1 week and then the next week they're doing robotics? These people are coming back every week?
Yeah, we definitely have kids that are registered for multiple weeks of camps, but we also see kids come back for our camps throughout the year. So we also offer winter break and spring break camps. So we'll often see the same kids at winter, spring, and summer camps, which is very cool for us to get to see the same kids over and over again. But obviously we love when new kids come in as well.
Yeah. And how fast do these things typically fill up? Like, are you already sold out of camps? I guess we should probably mention the ones that are not available anymore.
Yeah. Currently, Space and Flight, which is our first week of camp, is sold out. And some of the camps are getting close to full. However, I do keep a wait list for camp. So if you are interested, you should definitely send an email, even if it is full, because I'm happy to put you on that wait list. And as you know, summer plans can change, so things can definitely move around by the time that week comes.
For sure, yeah. What about kids that might need extra help, like someone who is maybe physically or visually impaired? Do you have anything that helps out those kids?
Yeah. So our educators are really dedicated to making sure that every kid has access to our programs and has a good time. We have a really good staff to kid ratio. So every camp will have 2 lead educators, and we also will have 2 camp assistants working all summer, as well as myself and other people in the building to help out. So it's always helpful to know if any kid has any additional or special needs coming in, but we are always happy to accommodate those needs.
And you're the education coordinator. So what is your role there? Are you one of the teachers? Do you get involved in these classes?
Yeah, I do. I do during the year. I'm also an educator. During the summer, I'm taking on the camp director role.
Okay.
So I'll be in and out of the classroom and helping out, and really excited to be in the room with the kids. But the other educators are definitely taking the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So
can you like dish on the details there? Like, what have you heard from these kids in the summer programs? Like, are there clear favorites? What has the feedback been?
So I helped run dinosaur camps maybe last spring break or the spring break before, and dinosaur camp was awesome. I'm going to keep saying it. Dinosaur camp is awesome.
Yeah.
Everyone should register for dinosaur camp. It's for ages 7 to 9.
Okay.
And we do some really cool activities around like volcanoes. We also do this activity called the Big Dig, because it's not just about dinosaurs in general. It's about dinosaurs in Alaska. So we do like searching for fossils and permafrost, and it's,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And I think Arctic Marine Science is going to be really special. We have an exhibition opening up at the museum called Arctic Marine Science, and I believe it's From Sikuliak to Shore. Is the name of the exhibition, and one of our educators helped with the exhibition. She did some of the art that's going to be in there, and she is running the Arctic Marine Science Camp, and I think that one's going to be really incredible. We did that theme over spring break, and it was very successful.
Nice. Yeah, Alaska has a pretty good reputation with dinosaurs, right? I feel like we found some really old remains recently in the last decade. Do you know if that's right? I'm sorry if I'm like blindsiding you with that question.
No, it's okay. I believe, so I know that the one that gets studied a lot, I'm not an expert, the Nanoxaurus, but we have a cool planetarium show at the museum that the kids who do dinosaur camp will see, called Dinosaurs Under the Northern Lights, where you can learn more about Alaska dinosaurs. But I know that I've gotten a lot of information about dinosaurs in Alaska from UAF resources, actually.
Very cool, yeah. Well, what are some things that parents should know before considering a camp at the Anchorage Museum, whether it's how it goes with pick up and drop off or just some things that the kids will be learning?
Yeah, so the programs themselves will run every day from 9:30 to 3:30. And we've extended our before and after care because we felt like we, again, wanted to just meet the needs of parents who work. So you can drop off your kid as early as 8:30 and pick them up as late as 4:30.
Oh, okay. Just be hanging out in the science lab or something?
Yeah, we have before and after care activities planned. And sometimes they get extra time in the Discovery Center, but we have specific things planned for those times. So they'll be having fun even during before and after care. But say you want to drop your child off closer to 9:30 when the programming starts, they won't be missing anything crucial for the theme and the 3-day kind of progression of things during the camp.
Right. So if you were a camp-aged child, what would be your personal favorite summer camp pick? I know it's dinosaurs now as an adult.
I know. I think probably bird camp would go second.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We have a member of our staff who I would call a bird expert. She's a real bird nerd, and she knows everything about birds. It's so interesting. And she's so knowledgeable. So I think the kids in that camp are in for a real treat. So,
nice.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing about being involved with these camps and getting to work with these kids?
My favorite thing is definitely getting to build the connection with the kids and helping them feel at home in the museum, since usually we only see kids for, you know, a few hours at a time versus getting to see them like at camps for multiple days. And I think just seeing kids get excited about the museum, seeing them get to learn about some really, really cool topics. And we sort of have something for everyone. So even, you know, the kids, we go through so many different types of activities. Even the kids who are maybe not as into like art you know, there's going to be something else we do during the day that's going to really catch their interest. But we never seem to have a problem getting kids to participate in everything. So, right. Yeah, I think just seeing the kids getting excited about the museum is the coolest part.
You threw out the email a little bit earlier, but what is the best way for people to check out the programs and register if they're like, oh, I got to do it now today. They're going to fill it fast.
Yeah, you can go to the Anchorage Museum website and you will find the tab that says programs at the top. And when you go down, it will say family, youth, and homeschool. You can click on that and then you will find the button that says camps. However, the easier way to do it is to Google search Anchorage Museum camps. You can also feel free to reach out to us at the camps email, which is just camps, as in C-A-M-P-S, camps, at anchoragemuseum.org.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, I want to thank my guest, Noelle Marty. She's the education coordinator for the Anchorage Museum. Noelle, thanks for coming in and getting us ready for summer.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Hope to see some of the listeners sending their kids over to the Anchorage Museum camps.
Oh, yeah, come see Chomper. All right. Well, right now it's time for us to take a short break. And when we return, we'll be looking into more summer camp options for parents and child care providers. I'm Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Dave Waldron, and today we're exploring the long list of summer camps that Anchorage has to offer to parents and child care providers. Some of the camps fill up early, but thankfully there's a lot of options to choose from. And right now to talk about some of those options with me is Rebecca Hathaway. She's the communication specialist for UAA. Rebecca, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, great to see you here. So how long has UAA been offering summer camps for kids? Because I only heard about these camps like a year ago. I think a lot of people assume the university is a place for college students, right? Not for 12-year-olds. So when did that become a thing?
So UAA has offered summer camps for quite a number of years. I do know that in the past 3 years, the College of Arts and Sciences, which is the largest college within UAA, 3 years ago, they started their summer camp program. And at right now this summer, they are offering 14 camps in total for rising 6th to 12th graders.
14 camps, man, that's a lot. I love that we have this great wealth of summer camps to choose from, even though we have a not wealth of childcare in our city. So you oversee the College of Arts and Science camps. Can you list off just a few of them for us?
Sure. Yes. I won't give you all 14.
You don't have to give the whole list.
But some of the ones that have popped out to me are creative writing. There's band, languages, psychology, painting, political science.
Oh, all right.
Guitar. There's even some camps in fandom, if you're into K-pop or Asian studies or things like that.
Uh-huh.
And there's also a very popular bone detective forensics.
Really?
Camp.
Wow. Okay. And these are week-long camps, right? So what would you do in a bone detective camp?
That one is so popular. We get kids returned to that camp year after year. And so essentially, the kids work with a faculty member in anthropology. And that faculty member teaches them skills for conducting dig sites. And at the end of the week, the kids kind of go on like a scavenger hunt, a sort of dig where they go to different locations around campus and they uncover those bones and then apply the forensic skills that they've learned throughout the week to it.
Oh, wow. That sounds amazing. So what's the feedback been? You said it's like a fan favorite, it sounds like.
It is.
Okay.
Everything that I've heard about the summer camps is universally positive. Kids love it. The faculty who teach the camps also really love it,
yeah.
Which I think is great. We get faculty and students return year after year. I would say the forensics bone camp, like I said, very popular. And we also have a brain explorers camp that I think is pretty interesting if you want to hear more about it.
Yeah, yeah. What are you exploring there?
So it has been our top performing camp for the last 3 years. Students get to spend a week week training a real life rat lab.
Oh, wow.
we have a rat lab on campus, 22 of them. And so the kids come in, they learn behavioral training techniques, and then they teach the rats to do tricks like walk across a tightrope or pull a lever. And they get to reward them with little pieces of chocolate or cream cheese. And the real kicker is that at the end of the week, all of the parents come in, and then the kids show them what they've learned, and then the kids actually practice those training techniques on their parents.
Oh, wow.
it's a really good time. There's lots of laughs and giggles involved with it. You'll see the kids rewarding their parents with, like, a piece of chocolate or something. It's a good time.
Their favorite mouse substitute treat. Well, I imagine that's really fun for anyone that's a fan. What was a Roald Dahl book? Witches, right? Where the kid trains a mouse to walk a tightrope in that. So, you know, you can make your childhood dreams finally come true. So you say it's taught by faculty and former students?
It's taught by the faculty at the College of Arts and Sciences.
Okay.
We have the largest amount of programs within any college. So you get a really wide range of faculty who are experts in everything from Alaska Native Studies to chemistry. And that's one of the things that I think makes the camps so unique is whatever you're studying, you have someone who is an expert in that. And they also have many years of teaching experience. And so they know how to adjust the curriculum to students and their different age groups. The camps are supported by staff who help run the logistics of it as well.
Okay. And I should clarify, you know, we're saying kids, but what is the age range for these camps, right? You're not doing kindergarten to first graders, right?
Correct. So for the College of Arts and Sciences, we offer camps for rising 6th to 12th graders. Some of the other colleges at UAA, for example, the College of Engineering, they offer a few camps for little kiddos.
Okay.
Some of those involve building Lego sets in a way that correlates to STEM curriculum.
We just learned about STEAM curriculum earlier on the program. How excited are kids to get to spend a week on campus? I mean, it seems like really good exposure for them to see what life is like at a university.
Yes. It's very special to a lot of our campers. The camps at UAA provide college-level resources that you would not get in a traditional K-12 classroom setting, right? I mean, what teacher has 22 rats on hand? Or, you know, what teacher can bring in dinosaur fossils or something just every day in their classroom? That unique element of these camps is something that really leaves an impression on kids. And we hope that it teaches them about all of the possibilities and resources available at UAA and that it could be, you know, a great stepping stone to their future.
Yeah, totally. How fast do these camps fill up? We were talking a little bit before we started, you know, the interview about them being close to filling up, but how fast should people be moving to get enrolled here? Like, how close are you to capacity?
You should sign up right now.
Okay.
If you want, you know, your kids to experience this. Our camps are really popular. As I mentioned, we have people return year after year. So if you can, I would say save your spot right now. All 14 of our camps have not reached capacity yet.
Okay.
But we are very close to being at 100% capacity for several of them.
Got it. And, you know, as you said, there's more camps than just the College of Arts and Sciences. Just briefly, if you could list a few of those as well. I've heard a lot of good things about the cooking one, where kids become a chef for a week and they learn about food, sanitation, and safety, and then they also learn how to cook. So what are some of the other options out there?
Yes. So the culinary program camps, like you said, super popular, super fun. Those are all sold out.
Oh, they are. Okay, got it.
They always
Never mind.
Go so quickly.
Ignore it. Yeah.
But there are other camps available from the colleges of business, health, and engineering. I touched on the engineering one a little bit, where they offer Lego camps and more STEM-based camps for a very wide range of ages. Athletics is also hosting a volleyball and women's basketball camp if you want something that's a little bit more movement-based.
Perfect. It seems like education is constantly getting cut or downsized in Anchorage, whether it's through ASD or UAA. Has that downsizing affected your programs at all, or are the programs a way of countering those cuts as a means of fundraising?
Our programs have not been affected by the challenges that a lot of the ASD schools are facing right now. I think our programs are a really great way to support those students, actually. One thing that's great about the College of Arts and Sciences summer camps is that we offer scholarships to Title I students. And so if you are a qualifying student, all you have to do is apply. And if you are awarded, you get free meals, transportation. The cost of camp is completely covered. And it's a great opportunity for people to experience something that's very worthwhile that otherwise would have been a barrier to them for financial reasons. Related to that, the Planetarium and Visualization Theater that we have on campus hosts field trips to Title I schools completely free. So we will bus in students, give them meals, and the students get to come in and watch a full dome show of things ranging from stars and constellations to marine life and oceans. Some of the films, if you have a really small in age audience, little kiddos, some of the films feature like Muppet characters or stories from the Magic Treehouse, right? And the surrounding visualizations that just totally, you know, encapsulate the audience and the audio sounds really engages the kids. And one more thing I'll say about it that makes this planetarium so unique is that all of the planetarium shows have a following presentation by a UAA faculty member that correlates to what you just learned. So, for example, we'll have a sold-out show on dinosaurs, and then we will have an anthropology professor come in and bring fossils, and the kids get to touch the fossils and learn and engage with an expert in this field live.
Nice. So, summer camps included, what are you most excited about for this coming summer? Snow is finally melting. What are you looking forward to?
This is very silly, but what I am most excited about for this summer is getting outside, seeing wildlife. I mean, all that everyone loves about Alaska, right? The hiking, the camping. I am a big wildlife. I'm a big animal person. And I am actually excited to visit the Brain Explorers camp on campus. I might pop in and, you know, see if I can take a picture of some rats or some kids, you know, hanging out. We'll see. But yeah, I'm really excited to enjoy those aspects of my job and my personal life.
So, Rebecca, you're still pretty new to Alaska, as I just found out. What brought you up here? Was it the wildlife?
It was the scenery. It was the outdoors. It is what draws, I would say, 90% of transplants here.
Yeah.
I came here from Chicago, and I really enjoyed aspects of the city, the walkability and things, but when I think of Alaska, I think of hikes and walking up the mountains and getting to, you know, camp in a public use cabin or by the beach. And I found that the people in this state are extremely friendly. Everyone is really willing to lend a hand to their fellow neighbor. And that's not quite something that I always saw in, you know, a more city busy environment. And I really love the wholesome, family-oriented aspect of Anchorage.
Absolutely. I'm glad we still have that reputation. I've been here my whole life, and sometimes I worry that we're losing it. But I'm glad to hear from a newcomer that that's not the case. So, Rebecca, if people are hearing this, they're interested, they want to enroll in dinosaur camp, bone camp, all these great things, what's a good place for them to find all this information?
So for more information and to see the full lineup of our camp offerings, you can visit uaa.alaska.edu/CAS, and you'll just see a button there that says CAS Summer Camps, and it will bring you to a lovely informational page with all the details. You can also just Google UAA College of Arts and Sciences Summer Camps if that's easier. You should be able to find all of the information you need there.
Perfect. Thank you. Well, I want to thank my guest, Rebecca Hathaway. She's the communication specialist for UAA. Rebecca, welcome to Alaska, and thanks for getting us excited for summer and summer camps. Sounds like it's going to be fun.
Yes, thank you. I'm very excited myself.
Well, before we wrap up today's show, I want to check in with someone that helps run a really great website with all of the Anchorage summer camps we've talked about on today's show, as well as many, many more. With me right now on the phone is Scott Ertl, who runs the site AnchorageSummerCamps.com. Scott, thanks for being with me today.
You're welcome, Dave. Thank you.
So, Scott, how long have you been running the Anchorage Summer Camp site?
We have been promoting summer camps in Anchorage since 2002.
Okay, and how did you get that gig? Because you're in North Carolina right now, right?
That's right, and we promote summer camps all over the United States. I had my own summer camp for 10 years, and I saw how difficult it was for most camp directors to get the word out. And instead of handing out summer camp flyers from schools to schools, we decided way back in 2002 to enter the digital age and help parents find all the summer camps in one place.
So the list of these camps is vast, right? I mean, there's over 40 of them. I saw one for cellists, people that play the cello, to go out into the woods and do a camping adventure out near Big Lake. What are some of the more interesting, far-reaching camps that you've seen?
Well, it's neat because for me, a favorite camp is where kids are going to be able to do something that they love to do that maybe they wouldn't have an opportunity experiencing it in school or in the regular, you know, after-school activities. So for kids to be able to maybe do ceramics, like a Turnagain ceramics clay camp, that's a fun place for kids to make pottery that they wouldn't typically have an opportunity of doing when they're in elementary or middle school. You know, whereas kids that want to be able to do things like rock climbing or going into the woods and going on different deep adventure trips, like Into the Woods Alaska camps or Alaska Rock Gym climbing camp, there's a lot of fun for kids that are going to be able to experience way more than they would like than a regular after-school camp or a Boy Scouts or YMCA program.
Yeah, and we've spent a lot of time on this show talking about, you know, three-day camp, week-long camps, but what are some of the camps that offer camps for people that need an entire month or even the entire summer?
Sure. So like a camp at a Pacific Northern Academy, they have like an 8-week intensive program where kids are able, you know, to do everything from like science experiments to inventing different ideas and getting hands-on, you know, opportunities to build the projects and having, you know, professionals to help them to tweak it and to make it, you know, improve, you know, instead of just a one and done, you know, building something and then it's over with. You know, they're able to really spend the time to help it come to 3 and 4 levels better.
Right. And I saw one on there, this one I've heard about quite a bit, the Dome. So it's, you know, the Dome here in Anchorage, and they have a huge space, and they do a bunch of indoor activities. What have you heard about that camp?
Yeah, so the Dome camp has everything from badminton and baseball, you know, football, soccer, ping pong, pickleball, ultimate frisbee, bike, softball, you know, working out, rowing machines, batting cage, spike ball. I mean, they have a huge variety of different activities that the kids are able to do. It's a lot of fun for the sports-minded kid, and especially for kids that maybe that's not their thing, but it helps them kind of stretch a little bit, way more than they would at a like in a school program, where the PE teacher is trying to introduce something for 45 minutes one day. They're able to do it for a couple hours and realize, oh, this is something that I can do. It might not be easy for me within 45 minutes, but after a couple hours, I really get the hang of it.
Yeah, for sure. So, Scott, have you ever been to Alaska before?
Yes, twice. Love it. Beautiful, beautiful state. So we did a cruise from southern Alaska, where we went into several of the different harbors and seen lots and lots of bald eagles, which are my favorite part, you know. And then my next trip, I want to go up to see Denali and be able to experience more of the glaciers, because several of the glaciers that we saw on the cruise ship had considerable melting, you know, when we were there.
So, Scott, if someone wants to add to this list, like I said, it's pretty long. I counted at least 40 camps listed on there, and it's easy to find. All you have to do is Google Anchorage summer camps, and it will be the first thing that pops up. How do they get a hold of you? How do they add to this list?
Sure. So camps that are looking to promote their summer camps on our directory, we have two different buttons on our AnchorageSummerCamps.com website. There's a Contact Us page where they can contact me or Rhonda, and we can get their information up on our directory, as well as there's an Add Your Camp page where they can manually enter in the information and upload their logos that they want to display their information about.
All right. Well, great. Thank you, Scott. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me, and enjoy your summer there in North Carolina.
You're welcome, Dave. Thank you.
That was Scott Erdl on the phone. He helps run the website AnchorageSummerCamps.com. We'll have a link to that, as well as all the summer camps that we've mentioned in today's show, on our website, AlaskaPublic.org. After this short break, we'll be back with State of Art. I'm your host, Dave Waldron, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we'll hear about a new book from Chittenden Oreille's Soldotna-based author Aurora Hardy. She wrote a fictional biography of her father, Sonny, who joined the Alaska Territorial Guard at 12 during World War II. Sonny left the family when Hardy was 4 years old, leaving her with nothing but stories from people who knew him. She says her book, Honor at Last, was a way to grow closer to a father she barely knew and show the lasting impacts on Alaska Natives whose military service went largely unappreciated. Hardy's view of her dad is complex, but she doesn't hold anything against him.
My dad was, on one hand, a disappointment to my mother. He left us when I was about 4 years old to find work, and he never returned. It kind of became like we just didn't talk about our father. So I never talked about my father. I was his favorite. When he had lived with us, he had always brought me presents. He brought me a sled dog. He'd always come home with a gift from work. Then when I went to high school, I'd run into relatives or people that knew him the rest of my life from high school on that knew him. And they had these larger than life stories about him. There was one where he was young and he shot a shotgun at some ducks and he killed 12 all in with one shot, which, you know, that's an example of the larger than life stories. He was a backup gun for, you know, Kodiak bear hunts, and he did save everybody's life from a wounded bear that was charging. And he said that the hunter was just standing there cocking his gun over and over again, and all the bullets kept coming out. He was panicked. And my dad had the presence of mind to, you know, raise his gun and kill the bear right as it kind of slid in. So people that knew him loved him. They said he was always full of good stories. That kind of awakens in me the story that I share where he read Bambi to me in his own way that was, you know, very different from the words on the page that my mother had always read. But he told a story of Bambi that was, you know, had a Yupik slant to it. So it was awesome. So I know he was a good storyteller. I remember one woman, she saw me in the village that was out in St. Mary's and on the lower Yukon. And she stopped and she said, you know, I know your dad and he was a good man. She kind of like chewed me out. And I was like, not that I thought badly of him. It's just that I didn't know him. So this was an opportunity to massively put together the stories that I heard about him and the possibility that, you know, the way his fatherhood and family life went was a direct effect of serving in World War II at a tender age, you know, 12 years old. So,
yeah, I find it interesting that, you know, you say that you didn't have bad feelings. You just maybe didn't know him well enough to have feelings about him. So I guess, you know, you mentioned that, you know, hearing all these stories about him and kind of the larger than life character, do you think that maybe getting to know him was some of that inspiration of compiling all of this stuff to maybe grow closer to your dad, maybe through stories?
Yes, it did. One of the things that affected me in real life is holding the discharge from the Army, and it said honorable discharge. And I was like, wow, my dad was an honorable man. And I had grown up hearing about on the non-Native side, how an uncle was a Green Beret and died, had a Purple Heart, other members throughout the family who had served, you know, gone to West Point or served in, you know, this or that. But nothing was ever said about my dad. And then when I went to school, we all learned about Navajo code talkers. Through writing this, I realized that my dad was just as honorable as any of the other military servicemen or women.
Yeah. I mean, could you maybe just briefly describe what, you know, life as a kid serving in the Territorial Guard might have been like for your dad during World War II?
My dad is listed in Muktuk Marvin Marston's book. In the back of his book, he lists the men and women who signed up by village, and my dad is listed in there. There are three men from Tuktuk, I think, and my grandfather and my dad are listed in there. So in my book, I explore the possibility that it took away from their cultural. You know, the Yupik would have been busy year-round with cultural practices based on subsistence and based on things like feasts, harvest feasts, and dances and potlatches. And then, you know, just a full-time gathering of, you know, food to exist and trapping and, you know, running dogs and stuff. That would have been just full-time. I was thinking, without knowing anything, I was thinking it must have detracted from that. And then also, my dad never, you know, went home. He left with my mother. He never went home until just before he died. So I was thinking, you know, he must have felt kind of like serving in the Territorial Guard must have made him feel like he was, his horizon was broader than just Tuktuk. So that maybe he had something to offer to, you know, the rest of Alaska through what he had served in his formative years.
Yeah, because I guess at that time, as you say, 12-year-old, he probably would have been very active helping the family and just contributing to kind of anything to, you know, help the group thrive and survive, right? So yeah, that must have been a very different upbringing than maybe other kids who grew up in a similar fashion and didn't have to leave their families to go kind of do this thing for the U.S. government.
Yes. And it would have been kind of maybe, you know, when I was 12 and, you know, just becoming aware of, you know, style and stuff, maybe wearing the uniforms and stuff like that instead of the traditional stuff that they would have worn. Maybe it just made him see, you know, himself differently, putting on the white uniform or the, you know, the Army uniform that they were issued. So I just try to explore it in the book and try to look at the events in his life as being a result.
Well, you say the book kind of examines the fact that, you know, his service wasn't really recognized for some time. And is that kind of similar for other folks that served in the Territorial Guard? It just, their service wasn't really recognized until, you know, a lot later in life or maybe after they had already passed away.
I think you're exactly right. I think the majority of the Alaska Native people who served in the Alaska Territorial Guard were just unrecognized. There's Muktuk Marston's book. There's a book on Kastner's cutthroats, a small book. Kastner assembled a black ops type unit of Alaska Natives who he took out to the Aleutians to help, you know, fight kind of like a, I don't know, Navy SEAL type group of special or skilled, highly trained Alaska Native men who, you know, did work on the ground facing the Japanese out on the Aleutian Islands. So there's that book. And then I think the fact that they were never discharged until, you know, like 2000s, 2007 was, I think, was the year I got my father's army discharge. And so they had no benefits, you know, and their family had no benefits or anything, no recognition at all until Senator Stevens, Ted Stevens, got this discharge. And then for most of the Territorial Guard, it meant that they could get the Army to pay for a gravestone. And that was about the, you know, the extent of their recognition. A piece of paper saying they were honorably discharged and then a gravestone. So
kind of related to that, you know, you talk about how, you know, you kind of frame this book through, you know, Alaska's participation through World War II and kind of the effects on a single family. And I know that the book is kind of talking about some of the ripple effects of, you know, your father's service and maybe how that affected his life and your family going forward. But what would you say were some of these effects on Alaska Native families who either had somebody serve in the Territorial Guard or were affected maybe by World War II on, you know, Alaska shores?
I think I would like to bring up a point from the book. And on chapter 18, I talk about racism. Mm-hmm. And one of the things on page 118, if I could read a little piece that I would really like to just put it out there for Alaskans, Native and non-Native, to talk about.
Yeah.
In 1915, the Alaska Territorial Legislature imposed legislation that severely restricted Alaska Native voting rights. The law said that Alaska Natives could vote only if they gave up their indigenous culture, customs, and traditions. Few Alaska Natives were allowed to vote under the system. In 1924, the Congress of the United States passed the Indian Citizenship Act. The act stated that all indigenous people born in the United States were recognized as citizens. The act allowed Alaska Natives to vote. And then in 1964, Congress passed the Civil Rights Act. The act prohibited discrimination against any person based on race, color, religion, sex, and nationality. But the effect was late reaching Alaska. Signs in the stores or other public establishments still said, no drunks, no dogs, or no Natives allowed. And my mom, you know, related this to us. When I was young, she was telling me that she tried to go into a store in Fairbanks and that sign was still up. So I think what you have, you know, and I look at, for example, there are a lot of issues that Alaska Natives face. And I think that nobody or very few people look into the fact that we're amazing because we've survived a lot of cultural change and diseases and wars. And then I think that there's a measure of social or racial adjustment to these massive traumatic experiences that nobody takes into account. It's like, okay, so you have a homeless problem and these people don't want to, you know, sober up. Well, it's like, it's beyond a personal choice. I think that a lot of people are just struggling to find their way. On one hand, if you think about it, on one hand, the Alaska Natives willingly welcomed Muktuk Marston and signed up to fight in the Alaska Territorial Guard as he went through the villages and signed them up. Some of the villages he went with Territorial Governor Ernest Greening, and they, you know, called on the Natives like, you know, the Japanese are going to steal your women. They're going to steal your fish. They're going to take you away. They're going to kill you. So, you know, help us, you know, by fighting. And then there was the end of the war. And then there were like all the people who served. There were some that were recognized and there were some that went, some men who went on to serve in Vietnam. But I think out of the whole, very few were recognized. So yeah. I think, you know, that has to have an effect that you're not seen. And very few people know about the Alaska Territorial Guard. and that Native people served in it. Yeah. If you're not seen, if you're not recognized, but you gave completely of yourself, I think it has a feeling of, you know, what is going on here?
Yeah.
You know, we need to question that.
Kind of discussing some of the fiction versus the history regarding, you know, the fictional biography. How did you kind of blend telling your father's story, but then also providing context through a novel?
I felt like I couldn't just make a straight up biography because I wasn't there and I didn't have a chance to talk to him about all the things that he had gone through to verify him from him directly before he died. So I thought, well, okay, I'll just do it as a fiction. The parts that were fictionalized were mainly like the parts like how he trained and the chapters where he went out and they shot down a balloon, a spy balloon, and was searching for the plane that was lost. The rest of it is pretty much based on the stories that I heard. So there are a few just to tie together a certain length of a certain, you know, segment of his life, but the rest are the stories that I heard, like shooting the ducks and, you know, shooting bears and things like that.
I find it interesting that I feel like you could have a real big maybe chip on your shoulder about your dad and maybe not having some of these opportunities to get to know this kind of like larger than life guy that everybody was telling you about. How would you say maybe your thoughts or, you know, your feelings towards your dad shifted while putting this together and maybe trying to really put yourself in his shoes?
I felt a great sense of healing peace. You know, I cannot stress enough how healing this was to just open my mind and explore how the world might have looked like from his angle. It was very uplifting, very freeing, and very powerful. Yeah, I really, for myself personally, I originally wrote the book as a very bare bones children's book. And I had my grandson in mind. My grandson, you know, his dad served in the army. And I hear all this, you know, like, thank you for your service and, you know, thank a vet and stuff like that. And then I was like, up until I wrote the book, I did kind of have a chip on my shoulder and say, hey, you know, my dad served, but he was never even discharged till like years, decades after he died. And, you know, any kind of benefits would have, you know, veterans benefits or anything would have really helped him and his life and would have helped me as a child of a veteran. But, you know, this book is just, it's just really healing. And I'm really grateful for how it turned out and that I just feel really good about everything. Yeah. I'm really proud of my father.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, that's... Yeah, like I said, I feel like somebody might, you know, just completely, if their father wasn't in their life, they might completely dismiss any of the maybe positive attributes that they had. But you were able to kind of just really focus on some of these other things and not necessarily dwell on maybe the negative of it.
I did feel like, you know, I couldn't talk about him, couldn't bring up his thing because mom would be upset. And but the issues of struggling for civil rights or Native rights still goes on, but I have my feet on the ground in relation to my father, so to speak. So, you know, I guess I just like, maybe that part of my dad that always told a good story is, and I try to keep a positive attitude.
Well, that might be a great place to wrap it up. Is there anything else that maybe you'd want to add about the book, or maybe what's the best way for people to get their hands on it so they can read it?
It's published by Epicenter Press out of Seattle, and it is sold everywhere. If you want, you could ask for it at Barnes & Noble, or you can order it online through Amazon. Honor at Last, Epicenter Press by Aurora Hardy.
Thank you so much for talking to me today. I can't wait to read the book.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
That was author Aurora Hardy. We were discussing her new book, Honor at Last, a fictional biography of her father who joined the Alaska Territorial Guard when he was 12 and left her family when she was 4 years old. It's available now. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson.
And that's all for our show. Thanks to our guests Noel Marty, Rebecca Hathaway, and Scott Ertle. Ammon Swenson produces this show. You can find us at the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Dave Waldron, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.